morning, everyone. The room filled up.
Liana. Dead.
Liana, good morning to you. I'm so glad that we're starting HealthCon for such an important topic, healthcare for 2S LGBTQIA plus folks. And I do want to start our conversation with the fact that we all rely on healthcare at one point or another in our lives, but not all of us fear going to the doctor. Not all of us. Are uncomfortable disclosing who they are to medical professionals. So I do want to start our conversation with a very important matter. Talk to us about the stigmas and prejudices that LGBTQIA plus people face when it comes to healthcare.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So, you know, I think it's important to say that even in a best case scenario, we exist in an incumbent system that wasn't built for us, right? So I think a little bit about when I was having my babies, and I sat down a desk from somebody who was also going through IVF, but they were in a cisgendered heterosexual relationship. And so our insurance covered their IVF, but wouldn't cover mine because I wasn't deemed infertile. But then when I went to the IVF process, I was infertile. And so I was over-pathologized and paying out of pocket for a number of tests that I didn't need. And that's the best case scenario, right? Like, I was living in New York City. I had the financial means to pay for IVF. It's just, and it wasn't purposeful. Like, my company, there was no one in the room to ask questions when they were putting together inclusive benefits. And so that's the best case scenario, right? Is this incumbent system that was not built for us. It gets significantly worse from there, right? Like, if you think about sort of the pyramid of privilege, I would say I'm at the top of it, right? I'm Latina, but I speak English without an accent. I appear white. And so when you think about sort of other folks within this community, 78% of our members did not have access to affirming healthcare before they found folks. 71% avoided seeking healthcare for fear of discrimination. And that fear is not misplaced. More than half of us have experienced discrimination or violence in a healthcare setting. That number goes significantly up if you're a member of the trans community. And so the reality is, you know, there are doctors who mean well but aren't armed with the information that they need, right? Brian held up the book around sort of food and how it can help with health. The average clinician gets 5 hours of LGBTQIA-specific training over the course of their training, right? So even somebody who cares is not getting the information that they need.
So what role can technology play in educating healthcare providers?
So I think, you know, I would say that it's not actually about technology for that, right? So I think technology is empowering companies like ours to take clinicians who have made this their lives work and bring their expertise to people across, we're in the United States today only, but bring it across the United States, right? So if you live in a care desert where you can't access this care, you now can, thanks to technology. I think, you know, from a clinical perspective, there are things like WPATH standards and, you know, lit review, and a lot of it is actually just the more non-tech side of things, but finding ways to make it clear that this is important and that we need to train all of our clinicians to have this expertise and to really start that at the most basic training levels.
And when it comes to training, where do we start when it comes to training healthcare providers on trans healthcare, on bisexual healthcare, on pansexual healthcare? Where do we start? What is the starting point on that?
Well, so what I would say is today the starting point has been an apprenticeship model. So people graduate from, you know, whatever their clinical training is, whether they're MDs or NPs or RNs, and then they tend to go to clinics that do this work and say, can I come work for you? The clinics are geographically based, so you typically have to live in a place that has a clinic, like a New York or San Francisco or Boston. They tend to be underfunded. The clinicians there tend to be overworked, right? And so and then they learn on the job, a lot of it, right? And through mentorship, right? So people who've been doing this work train them. I think one of the things that's been really powerful about Folks Health is that by virtue of being able to bring, we have about 40 clinicians on staff, by bringing them together within the walls of Folks, we can actually start to build sort of training modules that allow us to train the next generation of clinicians. That, though, is really specific to our business. I think it needs to be much broader than that. And so I think it has to be an across-the-board thing. I think, you know, medical schools have to decide that this is important and bring experts like the ones we have at Folks to come in and train their clinicians. I think payers need to make sure that their in-network clinicians have access to this education and training. I think employers need to confirm when they pick a payer that that payer has prioritized this care. I think it's going to be a multifaceted approach.
You mentioned geography a lot, and we are in Canada. Obviously, Collision is a big tech event it's a global event, and I do want to remind our audience that it is still illegal to be LGBTQIA+ in more than 60 countries in this day and age. What can tech do, and companies like yours, obviously you're based in the States right now, but what can we do to sort of be the catalyst of change, to be the catalyst of change of legislation for when it comes to medical care and healthcare for LGBTQIA folks?
Yeah, look, I mean, I could go on for hours about the double-edged sword of technology and the access that it has given us. I would say on the positive side, it has allowed us to bring to light the stories of people whose stories need to be told and might otherwise stay in the dark. And so I think, by being able to shine a light on why this care is so important and the impact that it has, and also as a tool against misinformation. There are a lot of scare tactics that are being pushed out there around what care for the LGBTQIA community looks like, and it's all false, right? Every medical association has agreed that this care is important and life-saving, and so leveraging technology to make sure that we're highlighting the truth and the stories of those who are at the center of this, I think is the most powerful thing.
Speaking of highlighting the truth and keeping the stories at the center, when it comes to trans and gender diverse healthcare, obviously there's a lot of ongoing discussions in the States, and I'm not going to get political here because I can't for a very long time.
Yeah.
We can talk with you about it for hours along. But I do want to talk to you about how do individual biases and prejudices play a role in providing healthcare to trans and gender diverse folks?
Yeah.
Especially in the States right now.
Yeah, I mean, so I will get political for a moment. I think ultimately, queer rights are human rights, right? And when there is a political party that is leveraging a marginalized group to push, I mean, it's a wedge issue, and they don't actually care, right? Like, they're just using this as a way to create noise and incite fear to drive voters. And so the reality is, like, they are misleading people when they pretend to care about people's health, because if they actually cared about people's health, they would focus on letting patients make decisions with their medical professional and stay the hell away from our most personal decisions. I think the reason I want to get political, though, is what that does is it creates air cover for people to think that their biases are okay. The thing about we all have biases. Every single one of us in this room has biases. The challenge is that when we're given tools that allow us to think that our biases are accurate, we've done a lot of harm there. And that's what's happening here, right? Like, we were listening, our chief clinical officer was just in Florida. They're passing this terrible law that's essentially going to prevent 80% of trans folks from getting the care that they need in Florida. And when she sat in the room, she said it was a bizarre experience, because there were these medical professionals talking about medical facts that were false. And so the reason I went political is I think it creates more space for those biases to exist. And people who may be well-intentioned to actually fall into misinformation without realizing that they're doing so. I think what I would say about biases beyond that is that's why a company like Folks Health is so important. Because to ask a patient to have to carry the load of figuring out what personal bias their clinician holds that could impact the care they receive, it's too heavy a load to ask of them, right? Like, we moved to Connecticut a couple years ago, and I went to the pediatrician, and the form said mother, father. And so I crossed out all the fathers and wrote mother, and then I walked in the room, and the entire time I was looking at this doctor trying to figure out, like, was that purposeful? Was that just because it's an old form? And I shouldn't have to do that, not when it comes to my kid's health, right? And so for a company like ours to exist, where you know that you're not only going to get affirming care, but expert care, and that you don't have to carry the load of navigating that, I think that's why it's really important.
Absolutely. We talked a lot about the present, but our talk is about the future and looking ahead to the future. I do want to talk about the measures that are being taken right now that can be addressed in terms of addressing the barriers. You did mention that you crossed out all the fathers and put mother, but that's on an individual level. But what can tech companies and bigger corporations do in terms of providing better healthcare for LGBTQIA folks?
Look, I think this is a corporate thing. I think the people who have the greatest power here are corporations. I think a lot about the conversations we have with like payers and employers, and you know, payers move more quickly when an employer says to them, "You need to help get this care in the hands of our employees." And so I think it is, and I also really firmly believe that, and this is true across the board, but it is the responsibility of those with the greatest privilege and the most power to actually carry the water for those who don't have it, right? And corporations, that's who carries the power in this world, you know, for better or worse. And so, so I think it is incumbent on them to make a very clear statement that they believe that their LGBTQIA employees deserve the same level of healthcare as their cis straight employees. And then to put their money where their mouth is and actually ensure, and a lot of them have done this, by the way, they've gone out and created inclusive benefits, and then they have found that those benefits are inclusive on paper but not in practice. Like, you can now search by LGBTQIA expertise, but there's one doctor and they're 4 hours away from you and they have a 6-month waiting period. Well, and so it is incumbent on the companies to say, that's not good enough. That checks a box, but it doesn't actually solve the problem. And we're going to make sure that we solve that problem. And so for me, I think, you know, they need to be at the forefront of change. And I will say it has been an interesting Pride Month because,
we did talk about it before.
We were talking about it. It's the weirdest Pride Month I've ever experienced, where, like, I remember early on in my career, not to date myself, there wasn't a lot of pride washing. Like, it was sort of like a big deal when a company changed their logo to the rainbow. But in the last decade or so, it's been pretty standard. And that's not been the case this year. And people in the community who typically get invited in to talk about queer rights are not being asked in. And I will say, like, I'm really saddened by it because I think it's an incredibly difficult moment for our community. And I think what we're seeing is which companies actually support us versus which companies supported us when it was easy to do so. And when it's easy to do so, that's not when it matters most.
Being an ally is not a one-time deal.
It is not. It's 365.
Exactly.
You know, 365 exactly. A year. And most importantly, when things are difficult. So I look at something like Disney versus Anheuser-Busch, right? And it's like, I understand it. Look, I started my career in marketing. I know what it's like when you're like, oh no, I just did this thing and we could lose a lot of value. But, you know, memories are short and history is long. And so you got to figure out, like, where do I want to stand? And what do I believe in? And I think we're seeing a lot of companies are really struggling with actually being on the right side of history right now.
But being on the side of human rights.
On the human rights, yep.
When it comes to mental health care, I do want to bring that topic up, and there are quite a few challenges that are faced by 2S LGBTQIA plus people. Can technology be at the forefront of addressing that, and how can we, do we envision a future where tech is instrumental in perhaps, you know, finding the help that we need?
Yes. Yeah, so I'll give you a couple of ways that we do it, but as a sample of how I think it can be done more broadly, not specific to folks. So one is we need community. So I think a lot about like One Medical, which I think is great, but if One Medical, and I've used, but if One Medical launched a content and community platform, like I don't need to connect to other One Medical patients. But you know, I go back to when I was getting pregnant, I had a lot of queer friends, none of whom were starting families. And I had a lot of straight friends who were starting families, but their experiences were very different. And I lived in New York City, right? So I would have loved the opportunity to connect to other parents who were queer and building a family at the same time that I was, or maybe were a couple steps ahead and could give me sort of a heads up. And so I think one is as a connector, right? Again, back to that double-edged sword of social media, it's like at its best, it is an incredible opportunity to connect people. And so, so that's one way that I think technology can really help. I think a lot of what we suffer through as members of this community is loneliness and isolation, right? Is feeling like we're going through something that that no one around us understands. And so being able to connect into others who do, I think is deeply impactful. And we've seen that at Folks with our health platform. Two is solving for care deserts. So ultimately, you know, the biases we were talking about earlier, I'm not gonna be able to get an affirming clinician into every county in Arkansas or Tennessee or Louisiana or Mississippi, or it's just not gonna, even California, right? Like, it's just not gonna happen. And so finding ways to have that not mean that people can't get access to the right providers. And so I think technology is at the core of that. And then, you know, creating an experience that is holistic and feels customer-centric. I think technology has an incredible opportunity. Like, I'll give you an example. One of the things that we do at Folks is we have our intake form has 400 questions.
That's a lot.
Most people will see 20 to 30 of them. And it's because our technology allows us to ensure that we're asking as many questions as we need to get you the best healthcare, but we're not asking you questions that don't apply to you. So as you answer questions, things are removed, other questions are added. That is deeply important because we've all been at the doctor where we fill out those 20-page forms, and then a year later they make us fill them out again. And it just feels like, did you not save it? I don't know, you know? So it's like knowing that we're going to file that and it's specific to you and who you are and your experience, I think allows for people to feel seen and heard and valued, and that is the basis from which they can build a trusted relationship, and then that trusted relationship will drive better health outcomes.
You mentioned customer centricity, and I do want to sort of touch on that point. Where do you envision 2SLGBTQIA+ healthcare in the next 5 years or so?
Yeah, I think we can lead the charge. Like, I think we are a large and growing community. So 1 in 10 adults in the U.S. identifies as a member of the community. The number doubles when you go to Gen Z. If you took the global LGBTQIA community and combined it, it would be the fourth largest economy in the world, right? I think there's this narrative that our community does not have spending power, and it is false. Like, y'all, we out-earn our non-LGBTQIA counterparts. And so some of it is like we are finding our own power as of late, partially forced on us because, as I said, the incumbent system at best is just not built for us and often purposefully keeps us out. And so for me, I think LGBTQI care looks like sort of the best of point solutions and lifetime care. So the expertise that we typically associate with a point solution where you can come in and know that this person understands your experience deeply. We can create, like, if you look at our clinicians, actually, we've taken their pictures down for security reasons, but if you look at our clinicians, they are, you'd be hard-pressed to not be able to see yourself in one of them. And so creating a clinical team that is reflective of the community that we serve, and then really focusing on patient centricity and not gatekeeping, right? I think there is historically this perception that doctors know all and we're here to just do what they say. And I think actually the power, the magic happens when you take the clinical expertise and you combine it with a patient's expertise on themselves. And when those two things come together, that's when the real magic in healthcare happens. And I think that's what it looks like in 5 years. And then I think it's going to go out, I hope, and that will influence the way that we...
I do want to talk about that collaboration between healthcare providers, HCPs as we call them, or and 2SLGBTQIA+ organizations and obviously members of the community. How do you envision that collaboration and how does that sort of make an advancement in terms of healthcare for our community?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is creating spaces like Folks Health where clinicians can go and practice in a place that is not only supportive but proactive, right? So we do difficult case analysis on a biweekly basis. So we sit down and we talk about what are the cases that, like, are not in literature that you know, and a team comes together to discuss that, a really expert team. We're constantly information sharing. So our clinicians all have a history, a deep history in LGBTQIA care, but that history is varied. And so they're able, you know, we create the dynamics from which, or the forums for which they can learn from each other. We're constantly doing literature reviews. So you look at the typical mode and it's every 5 to 10 years, we look at the literature and make edits. That's not how we roll at Folks. We look at it constantly to say, like, what is the data showing us? We know that clinical trials are not built for our community. We know, like, people will talk about puberty blockers causing loss of bone density. Those were studies done on 3-year-olds for whom puberty kicked in toddlerhood, right? Like, you can't apply that to our community. And so what we do is we look at the actual science and the data that we have. And because we've become a center of excellence, we have thousands of people on our platform that allow us to provide data that we can then make informed decisions around. And so that's the power of it, I think.
Ultimately, how will today's advocacy influence the future? And when it comes to technology, when it comes to better healthcare, and when it comes to better future for us all?
You know, it feels like a bit of a dark time for our community. But if we can take a step back, you know, I think oftentimes when those in power are losing that power, it's when their screams are the loudest, when they're holding on the tightest. And I think that's what we're seeing right now is some of the sort of incumbent systems are holding on because this is a future that they don't understand. And so they're worried about it.
Can we get them to understand it?
You know, I think actually, yes. I think so. I'll give you an example. My grandfather was a deacon in the Catholic Church. I would not say he was a particularly open-minded person. Very working class, blue collar, like. And then his favorite grandchild, his other grandchildren who might disagree with the favorite word, but whatever, you know, he and I know. His favorite grandchild came out as gay. And like, there was no question in his mind that, like, whatever I needed to be happy. I was so nervous to tell him. I was so close to him. And he, you know, he didn't even have a moment of, how dare you, who are you? He literally said, okay, I love you. And is she nice? And, you know, and we're going to have more and more of that. You know, like, ultimately, there are terrible people who are going to look at their kids and not do what's right for them. But more often than not, you can't help but look at your kid and say, I want you to be alive, which actually for this community is basic but real. And I want more than that. I want you to feel fulfilled and happy and complete. And so I think, and that's where the advocacy is, right? Like, I think companies like ours that create space for people who might not see themselves in their community to go to a website and see themselves and know that there are communities out there that they can join and are a part of and who see them and value them. You know, I think we're moving in the right direction, even if it doesn't feel that way oftentimes.
Liana, thank you so much for that answer.
Thank you for having
me. Appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Enjoy Collision.